Welcome to Level with Emily Reese. This is music by Jean-Marc Giffen for Sentinels of the Multiverse, which is a tabletop game that's gone digital. You'll hear more from him in a bit. First, we have a Google Hang coming up for all of our patrons on Sunday, July 31st. It's at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, and 9 p.m. in Scotland, where one of our guests lives. Kenny Young used to be the audio director at Media Molecule and worked on most of the Little Big Planet games, and he co-wrote the soundtrack for Tearaway with Brian D'Oliveira, and he's our other guest. Brian's also done music for Papo and Yo. They are great chaps, and we can't wait to hang with them on the 31st. More details are at patreon.com/level. Our first guest for today is Dan Hulsman. He runs a website called the Video Game Music Academy. It's full of resources for people interested in becoming game composers, from music theory lessons to marketing and business tips. Dan talks to us about what inspired him to create the site. The music you'll hear comes from Dan's favorite games over the years, including stuff from Final Fantasy, World of Warcraft, Transistor, and more.
I went to school to be a music major, and I got interested in trying to compose when I was in the middle of my music education degree. And aside from the fact that I got a little bit of resistance from trying to take that on within my department, I also found a lot of obstacles outside of my studies trying to just find quality information and clear information about how you get started even, and what the tools are that you would use. And, you know, this is back in the early 2000s, which isn't too long ago, but things have changed a lot since then.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't seem to be slowing down, which is awesome. But, you know, at the time, it was just really difficult for me to find a clear answer on pretty much anything. And I remember this was before it was a really huge deal to, like, find books online and things like that. So I remember just trying to find books or anything that would clue me in. And the only book I found was a Karen Collins book on the history of game audio, or I think it was a book on game audio, but it was very full of the history.
So I don't mean to interrupt you, but when you realized that you were into composing, you already knew that you wanted to do games.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I loved video game music since probably third grade, starting on the old Final Fantasies on Super Nintendo. And my mother actually hired a keyboard teacher to try to teach me and my sisters how to play keyboard. And he'd come to our house, and that was a real pain in the neck probably to deal with, because he'd come over and I would have not done any of the homework he assigned, but I would have found like a new video game song that I wanted him to teach me how to play. And so he was not thrilled to be spending that time with me, I think. So he'd come over and I'd try to make him teach me how to play the melodies from like the Mega Man X games on Super Nintendo, because that was a huge deal to me. I loved those games. Those songs were just fantastic melodies. The interest was early, and I thought, you know, hey, I'll give this a shot. And of course, I did like all the wrong things that you would do the first time I ever tried to compose everything. I pulled up a full blank orchestral score, which is just too much.
Yeah, it's a little intimidating.
Yeah, it's, you know, I didn't even, you know, I probably at the time didn't even know the first thing about half of the instruments on, you know, a standard orchestral score. And I barely had piano chops at the time. So it was just a mistake, and I had no idea what I was doing, and I had no way of knowing how to avoid those kinds of mistakes or what to do instead. So I would just sit there in front of Sibelius and sort of drool on my keyboard, wondering why things weren't going well for me. And so I went and I looked for that information, and I couldn't find it. And then I eventually kind of got overwhelmed and put that idea aside. College, shortly after, I sort of got that bug again and tried to look into it, and I found that the information situation hadn't improved very much. The same sort of thing ended up happening. I ended up getting involved in using a digital audio workstation a little bit, but still the information just wasn't really concrete or easy to define. And then the third time around, I got that bug and still kind of ran into that same situation. I figured, you got to be kidding me, that there's not like one place you can go where these people are congregating resources. So I figured I would just build one for myself. And it just was interesting because at that point, my career had taken me into sort of a different direction. I ended up going into marketing and sales out of college because when I graduated, the economy crashed and all the music teacher jobs vanished overnight. So I ended up having all these skills that helped me build this website and also happened to fall into the area that a lot of new composers and freelancers seem to struggle with in terms of, you know, a lot of the business skills and getting yourself out there and marketing smart and selling your services and things like that.
So tell us a little bit about some of the specific things that are on the website, how it helps aspiring composers to learn more about game audio and such.
Some of the most popular content that I have, I've got a couple of music theory analysis posts that are pretty lengthy. One of them is an analysis of the main theme from Final Fantasy VII. That post, I break down 7 music theory lessons, and they range from pretty basic to slightly more advanced techniques that people can use. And that's one type of content that I have. I also have a lot of posts about just things like the basics of email marketing or social media marketing, how to know what to do after you attend a networking event, things like that. So I try to really lean into my strengths since I'm a full-time music teacher by day. And I have all this experience as a marketing consultant. So I really try to lean on those strengths that I have. And then when I don't have an area that I feel like could be helpful, I try to bring someone else in to do a guest post or something like that.
So you said something earlier, you said you didn't really have keyboard chops when you went into college. So what was your instrument then?
Technically, on paper, my instrument was voice.
Okay.
And I taught myself how to play guitar starting at the age of 15. So relatively late compared to probably most people. And then, of course, I wanted to be the, you know, the singer-songwriter guy for a while and started to learn how to sing and got actually tricked into joining the high school choir.
Tricked.
legit tricked. I got straight up duped into doing it.
How? You got to tell the story now.
So I had just started dating a girl who was in the choir. And barely, like at the very beginning of that relationship, we were at some after-school function or performance, and we were hanging out in the hallway near the auditorium, and we had just like held hands for the first time. And that was like a moment, like we were just holding hands for the first time and enjoying that moment. And then, of course, right at that moment, the choir director walks by, and he walks past us, and he just stops and comes back. And he said, "You can't date a girl in the choir without being in the choir, okay? So you're going to come by my office tomorrow, and we're going to talk about whether or not you should be joining the choir." And, you know, we were just so uncomfortable. I was just like, okay. And so the next day, I ended up at his office and had no idea what to expect or what I was doing. And by the time I left, he'd convinced me that I had this great singing ability and that I should be in the choir and that the choir was going to Hawaii the next year. So it was a great time to join the choir. And I thought, oh man, it's great. It sounds like a fantastic thing to get involved in. So I'm going to totally do this. And then I left and I realized that the whole time he had never actually heard me sing. We had just talked the whole time. So I'm like walking out to my car thinking that guy totally got me. And I respect that. So I'm totally going to do this choir thing because clearly awesome. There are several things I can learn from this guy.
So now you're a full-time music teacher. Are you teaching voice, guitar? What do you teach?
I teach teach general music at a public charter school outside of Boston that is in an area that academically is underperforming. So I teach kindergarten all the way up to eighth grade. So that's a lot of kids and a very wide spectrum of things that I'm doing on a day-to-day basis. But it's also nice because I can start when they're super young and ingrain the skills that just are much more difficult to build once your brain kind of specializes when you're about 9 years old, and things like developing an ear become way more difficult. So developing voice and listening and that kind of stuff with the younger kids is really awesome because I can just sort of build my program, and I know that I'm teaching those skills, so I know that when they're older, they're going to be able to really, you know, knock it out of the park.
And I'm sure you have plenty of opportunities to talk with them about games.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I feel like they're surprised every time it comes up that I like video games.
Sure, because you seem so old to them,
I'm sure. Yeah, because I'm an old guy. Yeah.
Yep.
Which is awesome. But yeah, they're like, oh my gosh, you play video games? It's like, yeah, what do you, and I'm, I could probably beat you. All right. So. So yeah, we talk about it. I've actually had some of my kids, we do, you know, annual performances and things like that. And I had a couple of my classes do video game stuff, which is fun. I had a fifth grade class do the main playing theme from Candy Crush Soda Saga.
How has this Video Game Music Academy project grown or changed? Has it turned into more than you expected? What's the future look like?
When I first started it, I started it under a different name and sort of was all over the place in terms of what I was doing with it. I wrote a couple of reviews and I did a couple of music theory analysis, and then I didn't really do any of the business stuff that I was really strong in. And then I kind of shut that down and sort of rebooted when I realized that I hate writing reviews and things like that. So the long-term goal is to make it an online, like a full-blown online education resource with courses and things like that. So it's grown. It's only been up for a couple of years, and we've got a lot of subscribers on the newsletter. We've got a private Facebook group with over 300 people in it that I just started about 3 months ago. And that's really awesome to be involved in. We had our first meetup in real life at PAX East recently. The long-term goal is to offer online courses and do online events and things like that, for not only just because it's, I think, a great opportunity to learn online, but it's also, I think, it's a really helpful thing to have as an option for people who don't necessarily live near a major metropolitan area or can't dish out the hundreds or thousands of dollars it takes to sometimes get to these live conventions. If you really want to get out there and network, that's a lot of money. And when you're getting started, it's tough. I've really tried to make it a place where if you feel like you have no idea what you're doing, it's approachable, because that's what I needed and that's what I want to give people. So hopefully, it seems like it's going well so far, and hopefully I can keep that ball rolling. If people listening are interested and want to check it out, they can go to videogamemusicacademy.com and check out the blog, check out the resources page, and sign up for the newsletter, and we'll send you free content.
Awesome. Great. Thanks a bunch, Dan.
Yeah, thank you, Emily.
can learn more about Dan Holzman at videogamemusicacademy.com and patreon.com/level. Jean-Marc Giffen writes music for Sentinels of the Multiverse. That game started out as a tabletop, and it also has digital play. Jean-Marc had the chance to score loads of different environments and heroes and villains, and the variety of music is fantastic. There's a lot of it, too. There are 5 volumes.
Sentinels of the Multiverse is a cooperative superhero card game. It's available in a tabletop format, but we're converting it to digital. And essentially, each player plays as a different hero, and each hero has a deck of cards specific to that hero. So there's, for example, Legacy, who's the Superman archetype, and Tachyon, who's like the speedster, different characters like that. So each player chooses a different hero, and together you're working to foil the plans of a nefarious villain. Each villain is also their own character with their own unique deck of cards and scenario. And from there, the gameplay is different every time you play. In addition to those 2 elements, there's also an environment. And the environment is neutral between the heroes and the villains. So sometimes it helps you and sometimes it hinders you. And sometimes you can play the game to try and use it to your advantage.
It seems like there have been perhaps expansion packs or something, because you've written a ton of music for the digital side of this game.
Yeah, so it originally started out just as a base game in 2011 and was 10 heroes, 4 villains, and 4 environments. But then thanks to successful Kickstarters and funding on the part of Greater Than Games, they have been able to make many expansions, and most expansions have 2 additional environments, 2 additional heroes, and 4 additional villains for a greater amount of scenarios. And I think they've made about 7 such expansions right now. So yeah, there's a lot for us to convert digitally, and we're still working on it now. We just wrapped up season 1, which is sort of the first half of the content, and now we're working on season 2, which will be the final half of the content.
So, Jean-Marc, how did you get involved with this project?
It was sort of a roundabout way. So I was originally doing programming out west for a mobile software business company, and sort of metrics and point of sale, that sort of thing. And 2 things were kind of going on for my wife and I. One, we were thinking of moving back home out east. And another was kind of wondering if maybe I might be more suited to do some other kind of work. Because as much as I loved the people I worked with and sort of the work environment, that kind of thing, I found I really wasn't connecting with that kind of software development.
Okay.
So at this time, there was a Kickstarter going on for a game that I was really excited about. And it was sort of a retro 2D platformer with lots of characters and things like that. And this was sort of back before every indie game company tries that.
Yeah.
And so I backed it, and one of the updates was they said they were looking for a programmer, and you know, I was doing programming and asked, you know, my wife if she thought that would be a good idea, and she said, yeah, go for it. So I responded to that and ended up being one of the programmers on that team. And so I started doing the programming for it, and they already had a music guy, so you know, I kind of let that be because I'd kind of grown up doing music to various capacities. But they weren't very satisfied with the work that the music guy was doing. They mm-hmm. didn't think it really matched the game. And so I said, well, I could take a crack at it. And I made a few songs for them, and the project lead thought they fit really well, like they were really going to work for it. So I kind of took on this double role of being a programmer, doing the engine for all the characters that were going to be in the game, and sort of the different ways that they can interact with each other, like how to make each character unique. And then I would do like a theme song for each of them. Now, unfortunately, the project ran out of money and it fell through and didn't really work out the way everyone had originally thought. But during this process, I started to really realize how much I loved doing the music side of things as well. Mm-hmm. And sort of the things I liked programming, like the sort of modular engine stuff side of things. And so I was like, well, maybe I could do more game music, but I don't know. There's lots of other people doing that. And I wasn't really sure how to do it or how to make my music, you know, how to mix it together right or anything like that.
Yeah.
And that's about the time that I reached out to Zach Parrish, sort of just incidentally, which I talked about on a previous podcast, you know, on his work on Velda's story, just saying how much I liked it and stuff. And then he sent me the source files and I took a look at them and, you know, I was kind of like, oh, okay, I see what he's doing here. You know, he has this here and it's at this level and he's doubling these things. And thanks to the source file, I was really able to like see how things worked. And I started talking to him about all these different things and sort of what I was going through. And he really encouraged me and sort of supported me. And I was like, you know, well, maybe I can do this. I'm starting to see how it actually could work now. Then I started trying to put together an album of music mm-hmm. because really I had no recorded stuff ready. It was all just sort of on paper or whatever. And so I tried to put together an album. And in the middle of that, a friend of mine who had seen me working on this previous game project said that a friend of his was looking for a programmer for a card game. And he didn't really explain much beyond that. And I wasn't really looking for new programming work, but I thought, well, but, you know, it was a friend of a friend, and I just thought, well, okay, I'll go meet him and see what it's all about. So I went down and met a guy named John Arnold, and we kind of started talking about this card game. And originally I had something like, you know, Solitaire or something like that in my mind,
right.
But he was showing me Sentinels of the Multiverse, this cooperative superhero card game. And I thought, you know, oh, this is actually really neat. And what connected with me about it in terms of my previous experience was that this is a card game that involves many different characters with many different abilities. And that's very similar to the kind of work that I've been doing for this retro platform game. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, yeah, this looks like something I could do. And then I can't remember exactly how it came up, but somehow we talked about like, oh, well, I'm kind of working on doing music. And he mentioned at the same time, oh, we're looking for somebody to do music. And I was like, oh, okay. He's like, well, just send me your stuff. And of course, most of what I had at this point was like chip tunes and stuff like that.
Right.
And they said, well, can you do not chip tunes? And I always said, yeah, I could do non-chiptunes because, I mean, when I was in university, I would actually be composing for like an orchestra or an ensemble or something like that. But mm-hmm. I hadn't actually recorded any of that stuff.
Right. But you knew you were fully capable of doing it.
Yeah. Like I felt like if I had to take one of those chiptunes and orchestrate it, I could do that. I just
definitely
hadn't. I just hadn't done it. The most intimidating factor for me was the actual production of it, like using virtual instruments and mixing it and all that stuff. That was stuff I had almost no experience with at all. And I didn't really have a ton of people, especially not local, like in town, to help me with it at that time.
Because mm-hmm. You were back home by this point, right? Or
Yeah. Okay. I'm out in Nova Scotia, Canada. So it's a wonderful place, but it doesn't have the biggest niche scenes like video game music composing or anything like that. Anyway, that's how I got started on the whole thing.
And when was that?
That was 2 years ago, so okay. It happened really quickly, actually. I went from just kind of trying to put an album together, which I never actually managed to finish, to having a job where I did programming half the time and music the other half of the time.
And how does the music work in the game then? How does it function between, you know, gameplay or menu or what's the flow like?
So there are three primary types of music in the game. There's sort of the menus and victory music. And that's, you know, what you hear when you load up the game. And it's supposed to be reminiscent of a Saturday morning superhero cartoon from, you know, maybe the early 90s. The main music that you hear during gameplay, though, is based on the environment you're playing in.
Okay.
So currently there are 15 different environments in the game, and each track is about 5 to 6 minutes long. And we decided to go with a longer track like that because a play session will last you between like 30 minutes and an hour. And so we're kind of like, well, if you're going to be playing for that long, you don't want to hear the same thing too many times.
Right.
So we decided to make the loop a little bit longer to deal with that. So some of the kinds of environments that are in the game are like a dinosaur world underwater, a corrupt city full of bad jazz. An old factory with vats and mutated rats and a small town in the Wild West and a robotics factory, things like that. So they're all very diverse in terms of what the expectation for the sound is.
What were some of your favorite environments to score then?
Insula Primalis was the first one I did. That's the dinosaur world, and it involves a lot of percussion.
Yes, and, yeah.
In terms of real world playing, percussion is sort of my focus, so I kind of fell into that a little bit more naturally. And then there's Ruins of Atlantis, and that's sort of the underwater music. And I just loved making that sort of mysterious soundscape. and just kind of using different sounds that I'd never used before because, you know, I was so used to working with acoustic instruments. And also Pike Industrial Complex allowed me to pull out my percussionist card and mess with the time signatures. And, you know, I wanted to only use stuff that sounded like metal and plastic and, you know, just random stuff you might happen to find in an abandoned factory. And then there was Silver Gulch, which is a kooky Wild West style of music that I'd never done before. I actually consulted my dad on that one because he watched a lot of cowboy movies growing up.
That's awesome.
I guess the other two of significance would be the Enclave of the Endlings, because this one was actually one of the hardest for me to make because of the sound design. It was supposed to sound like it was just a part of a 60s cartoon. And so I broke out the theremin.
The Enclave of the Endlings!
And then the final one that meant a lot to me was the Time Cataclysm. And basically, in the card game, Time Cataclysm takes one element from each environment that's been created so far and puts them all into one deck. So it's as if the different universes and different periods of time all collided into one. And so I had to represent that musically. So my idea was, well, I'll take elements from each of the pieces of music and just mash them together and see what happens. And not literally just like rip one stem from one and one stem from another and put them on top of each other, but like actually try and compose something that sounds like everything is equally represented. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being like 17 minutes long as a result. But just the process of taking all my old work and mixing it together into something like a mega mix for a brand new piece of music was like really, really fun. In addition to the Vyrant themes, whenever you are defeated by a villain, it will play a theme song for that villain. And currently there are 23 villains in the game. And I generally keep the themes short, you know, just like, here's the melody kind of thing. So they're about a minute long or so, and then they loop. And so some examples of those would be like Baron Blade, who's a mad scientist pulling the moon into the earth. Thank you. Omnitron, a self-aware robotics factory. Chairman Pike, who's the underground boss of Rook City. Dreamer's interesting. She's an innocent child whose nightmares produce evil manifestations, and so you're actually trying to subdue her manifestations instead of defeating her. You're trying to save her, actually. And then there's La Capitaine. She's a time-traveling pirate. Misinformation. She's a two-faced assistant to the heroes. So by day, she acts like she's their assistant. And then by night, she's actually a villain. So I kind of reflected that in the music by having like the first half is just a standard day at the office or whatever. And then the second half is like a twisted version of that same piece.
Well, it's a really neat game, and you have done such nice work on it, Jean-Marc, so I really appreciate you talking with me about it today.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you so much for inviting me on. It's been a pleasure.
You can learn more about Jean-Marc Giffen at patreon.com/level. Jean-Marc was a patron of the week a couple of months back, and we put a link in the article on Patreon for this show, so if you'd like to hear which pieces he chose, you can go check out that past show when Jean-Marc was a patron of the week. And if you would like to become a patron of the week, you can do so by supporting us on Patreon. Remember, there's that Google Hang with Kenny Young and Brian D'Oliveira, and that's on Sunday the 31st, and that's for patrons only. You can become a patron for as little as $1 a month. Learn more at patreon.com/level. I'm Emily Reese. Sam Keenan is our producer. Say hi, Sam.
Hello.
You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Level with Emily and learn more about Sam and me at june-media.com. Remember, June is J-O-O-N.